well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Mark Oliver from the National Shooting Sports Foundation. We got the April NICS numbers yesterday, and you know, pretty good news nationally. The numbers ticked up from where they were in April of 2025. A lot of that, though, I think stems from the gun control efforts in several states, including the Commonwealth of Virginia, where, you know, come July the 1st, we've got more than a dozen gun control laws that are slated to go into effect, including a ban on the sale of so-called assault firearms and large-capacity magazines. Now, Governor Abigail Spanberger actually has not signed that bill yet. Remember, she offered amendments to the legislature. The legislature rejected those amendments. They sent the bill back to her. To the best of my knowledge, she has not accepted those changes, although I should probably go check. But if she has not already approved those changes, she will. There is no world in which Abigail Spanberger says, you know what, actually, no, we're not going to have this gun and magazine ban after all. It's just not going to happen. And Virginians are reacting accordingly. You know, since at least February, and maybe going back to January, the NICS transfer numbers in Virginia have been above what they were the same time back in 2025. And what's interesting is, as we get closer to that July 1st deadline, the numbers are only increasing. We talk about this again with Mark Oliver, but we're not just talking about Virginia today. We're also talking about what's going on in states like Connecticut, Rhode Island, maybe Minnesota, where the state Senate just passed a sweeping gun and magazine ban bill by a single vote on Monday. So it's a great conversation about some not so great topics, but I do appreciate Mark joining us. Take a look and a listen. Mark, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Hey, Cam, I appreciate you having me. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Well, it's always good talking with you, too. And no offense to Larry, but at least I don't have to hear about the New York Yankees during this conversation. So
you and I can commiserate about the Boston Red Sox, and we can still be diehard fans, even though they're in the cellar. But, you know, we're true to the team.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I will say I'm not following as closely as I have in seasons past. After I saw the game against the Orioles, where the Orioles ran out of fireworks for the scoreboard because they were hitting so many home runs, I thought, you know, I'm just going to tune it out for a little bit. Because at the time, I was already dealing with, you know, the Virginia redistricting effort. We had all these gun controls. I don't need any additional stress in my life.
You know, some people take social media breaks. Sometimes Red Sox fans have to take a break from looking at the stats.
That's right. But let's talk about what's going on in Virginia. You guys published the latest NICS numbers, both nationally and for some of the states. And you know, it looks like the NICS numbers on transfers up, what, about 1.6% across the country in April compared to April of 2025. That's some good news.
Yeah, we have a slight increase, which is good news. I mean, the springtime tends not to be a time of huge gun sales. I mean, we obviously see firearm sales increase every year in the calendar. We see those increase in the fall. Springtime tends to be a little bit down. We know the summer tends to be a slow time because people are off on vacations. People are, you know, taking time with family. You know, so people aren't concentrating. But, you know, we do have some of those early, you know, the turkey season's kicking in and people want to get out in the woods. But 1.6% increase overall across the nation is a move in the right direction. So, you know, things are looking healthy. We're trending in the right area. And I think for anybody who has been paying attention for this some time and anybody who may have been a SHOT Show, they saw that the attitude among the industry was fairly positive, that, you know, people are thinking that things are going to be good. And of course, some of the trends that we're seeing with the administration, of course, taking care of the industry and taking care of your Second Amendment rights have been very encouraging. So, you know, we're very happy with what we're seeing. And of course, we know there's room to get better. So we'd love to see those numbers get higher. But, you know, this is a great sign.
Absolutely. I mean, the ATF released the text of 21 of the proposed rules today. And I know that you folks will be going through those rules with a fine-tooth comb. So maybe in the next week or so, we can have you back to talk about some of the rules and how they'll impact the industry as opposed to individual gun owners. But I did notice that in your release about the April NICS numbers, there were a couple of states that are doing better than others, and not for the greatest of reasons, right? Sales up considerably in Connecticut, I believe 28%. Of course, they've got the bill that would ban striker-fired semi-automatic handguns for sale. And then Rhode Island, where they're looking at banning the possession of so-called assault weapons just a year after they banned their sale. Nick's transfer numbers up almost 50%. But then we get to Virginia, right, where 13 different major gun control policies passed the legislature. Governor Abigail Spanberger has signed many of those. I don't think there's any chance she doesn't sign the rest of these bills or at least let them go into effect. 79% increase in NICS background checks for firearm transfers compared to April of 2025, Mark. That is staggering. And we've seen that number actually increase from February to March to April now. That number just keeps getting higher. More and more Virginians are exercising their Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So we've seen that trend happening. You know, I think it was 58% last month. It was, I think, 28% the month before, if I'm correct. But you know, when I saw those numbers in January, February, March going out, I was like, these numbers are going to only increase as we get further into the calendar year, right up to that July 1st deadline of when this ban on the sale of modern sporting rifles, the AR-15 style rifle, or what Governor Spanberger wants to call an assault weapon. When that goes into effect, that we're going to see those numbers continue to increase right up through then. And that really is because people become concerned that their rights are going to be taken away. So they're going to exercise those rights before they're robbed of them. So that's what we're seeing happening. Ken, I know you've talked about it on your show before. We've seen the reporting, locally in some of the outlets. Firearm sales, not just the NICS numbers, but we've seen it, anecdotally from some of these retailers that they're just slam up busy. Yeah. I know that at my local gun range where I go to, it's a firearm or it's a range retailer. They actually had to take one of their classrooms that they teach classes in and convert that into essentially one of their storage armories because they're doing that high of a volume of moving through things through. So we were able to host a range day there for some journalism students recently in the classroom that we normally use. They're like, hey, we're going to have to move you to a different space because we're using that to store all the guns. They're moving that many guns through right now because people are concerned. And, and it's not just Virginia. Like you said, we're seeing this in Rhode Island and Connecticut. Rhode Island is interesting because the law to ban the sale of modern sporting rifles hasn't even gone into effect yet. And they're already talking about confiscating the ones that you already legally possess. So that's why I think you're seeing that these people they're buying while they can, while that right is still at their fingertips and someone doesn't step in to take it away. In Connecticut, of course, with the striker-fired ban, they're essentially going after the Glock handgun, which, of course, is one of the most popular selling handguns, mostly because it's a reliable gun. People know it's going to work as it's designed to do each and every time. The Connecticut State Police carry it. We're seeing this in other states. Maryland wants to, there's a bill still sitting on Governor Moore's desk to sign that could potentially ban that. And we've warned the governor then that if he signs that law, we will see him in court. People become concerned, and this is what the outgrowth is and the reaction to it is. I think I told you in that press release, the quote was, Americans are going to exercise their rights, and they're going to reject gun control. And this is the data that shows that. This isn't me just saying it. This is the data that shows it. In these states particularly, where their rights are threatened, they're exercising those rights at double digits, way off the charts of what they were a year ago when those rights were not threatened.
I think we're going to see another boomlet in Minnesota. I know that I know that concealed carry permit applications have nearly doubled in some parts of the state. But now you look at the bill that just passed the Senate yesterday in Minnesota, a one vote Democrat majority, and that's all that they needed, right? They were able to convince every Democrat to hop on board this bill that would ban again, modern sporting rifles, would ban magazines, I think over 17 rounds. And they packaged this with, money for school security, mental health, so that they could give these rural Democrats cover to say, well, I didn't necessarily like the gun ban portion of the bill, but I voted for it because of this over here. I expect that we're going to see, you know, again, a similar surge in sales in Minnesota here in the next report that you guys have coming out.
Cam, I don't think you're wrong. I think that could very well happen. Of course, in Minnesota, we have a very narrowly divided legislature up there. Like you said, one vote in the Senate and one vote in the other direction in the House. And the backstop really is the House. So that Senate bill now has to come back over to the House and they'll debate it there. Our folks have been working very tirelessly up there. You know, I think some of the articles have noted that there have been three firearm, related organizations that have been consistently there, and NSSF is one of them. And we're fighting this because this just doesn't affect the ability of our members to be able to sell the firearms that are the most popular selling firearm in America, more popular than they are, Ford F-150s on the road today. There are 32 million of these rifles in circulation, but it's also those are our members who are serving the customers. And those are people, those are everyday Americans who are obeying the law, doing everything they're supposed to do, and want to be able to exercise their rights and own the firearms that are legally available for them to possess. So I think that you're seeing the same thing, that you're going to see what you're talking about in Minnesota will very likely replicate what you're seeing here in Virginia and what you're starting to see in some of the other states that are threatening other gun control laws as well.
You know, and part of this, Mark, I mean, I know that the big push for Democrats to try to ban these firearms is, so far, the Supreme Court hasn't said you can't, right? I mean, they turned away the Snope case out of Maryland last term. They've been holding on to five hardware cases for months now, including challenges to Cook County's ban on so-called assault weapons, Connecticut's ban on modern sporting rifles. At the same time, we just saw, we've seen the DOJ actively get involved, challenging Illinois' ban. We saw Harmeet Dillon send a letter to the city of Denver last week saying, hey, listen, if you don't stop enforcing your ban on so-called assault weapons, we're going to take you to court. Looks like Denver told Harmeet Dillon to go pound sand. So I guess we are about to see a litigation there in Colorado. Do you think the DOJ's efforts to go after and challenge these gun bans, does that put more pressure on the Supreme Court to take a case now or at least sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. I think there's more pressure building from the DOJ. And we were very fortunate for NSSF to have not just the acting Attorney General Todd Blanche out of SHOT Show, but Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dillon came out as well and was able to speak to folks in the industry about what some of their concerns are. And these were all things that we were speaking with her about. And she really is a force of nature on this, on protecting the Second Amendment rights. She's been incredibly diligent and working tirelessly to get this stuff done. But I think you're right. It's going to put a lot of pressure because now you have a Department of Justice for the first time that has been taking a stand to protect Second Amendment rights instead of you sitting idly by or actively working against your Second Amendment rights. So that's been a sea change. The difficulty right now for the Supreme Court is that we don't have a circuit split. That all the circuits that the circuit courts that have upheld a ban are all in unison. And of course, we have cases out there at the Ninth Circuit that are continuing to circle the drain that could tip the balance. That if they get those decisions and now you have a circuit split at the Ninth, then you could have a reason for the Supreme Court to take those up.
Well, or the Third Circuit too, right? I mean, we had the New Jersey gun and magazine ban. Oral arguments were held last October. And this was a case where the Third Circuit, sua sponte by itself, said, we're going to take this en banc. We're not going to wait for that panel decision to come out. We want to hear this as the entire court. If you look at the makeup of that court on paper, there is a majority of Republican-appointed judges. They've done some other good work in terms of respecting the Second Amendment rights, the Range versus Garland issue, for example. I don't know what's taken the court so long to release its opinion there, but I think that's where we're probably going to get a circuit court split. The Ninth Circuit seems to be where the we've got good judges like, Lawrence Van Dyke on the Ninth Circuit, but I think the majority of those justices are still anti-gun, but I think you're right. I think they are waiting for that circuit court split. I wish that they wouldn't wait for it.
It's interesting because if those of us who've been watching the Supreme Court, of course, remember when they turned away Snopes and you had that decision come back. You had Justice Kavanaugh come out and say that he believed that the court was going to have to take up this question within the next two or three sessions. We're in that next two or three sessions. That has to happen soon. I think that when you start to look up at the people, the justices on the court who have talked about this, course, Justice Thomas has been very clear that he wants this case. He wants to bring it forward. But Justice Alito, just as much as Justice Thomas wants this, Justice Gorsuch has signed on to some of these dissents of saying that we shouldn't be turning these cases away. Then you've got Justice Kavanaugh saying the question needs to be brought forward. So there's four justices at least. And of course, that leaves your last, you need five justices to take up that case. And that leaves the question of where the Chief Justice might be. And if we look back at the cases he's decided upon that were landmark Second Amendment decisions, of course, you're looking at, you know, back at the Heller decision, you're looking at the Bruin decision. The Chief Justice was where we would hope he would be on the Second Amendment issues. And we believe that he'll be there as well. The Second Amendment, in our estimation, is absolutely clear that you cannot ban a firearm just because it looks scary. I mean, that's what the Heller decision came out, said you can't ban an entire class of firearms. And that's what these people are trying to do. Not just with Virginia's ban on modern sporting rifles, the AR-15 style rifle, but we're also seeing that now in Connecticut, where they want to ban the semi-automatic striker-fired handguns.
Yeah.
So this is a serious issue that the court is going to need to address. And I think that when they address this, it's going to be a pretty – I don't think this will be a narrow decision just saying you can't do this than this little particular thing. And we've noticed that the court tries to make their decisions as narrow as possible. I think that when the court finally takes up this question, that is going to be a pretty big sea change on how we deal with this. And I think that you're going to see all these states that – I think I saw an article, was, you know, 10 years ago there were, you know, 7 or 9 states that had – bans on modern sporting rifles, and now we've got 13. So this is becoming a growing issue that has to be addressed. And I'm hopeful. It is frustrating, like I said, those of us who are watching the court cases get relisted, you know, every week, every other week. It becomes tough to listen to. But I think when the question finally comes, folks like us, the others who have filed these cases, we're ready for that fight. We're ready for that argument. And we believe we have a solid argument to protect Second Amendment rights.
Absolutely. And I know we've got tens of thousands of Virginians, if not hundreds of thousands at this point, who have, purchased a AR-15 or other modern sporting rifle over the past few months with no intention of giving it up. If Virginia Democrats do pull a Rhode Island and come back next year and say, actually, those guns we said you could possess, we just couldn't purchase. Well, now you can't possess them anymore.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Mark, I'm not giving my guns up, and Democrats can't have them. So,
I think you've been very aware of Nick Freitas. I think there's, you know, people are obviously following him online. We were fortunate to have him as a guest out of SHOT Show. We hope to have him out there again next year. But, you know, there's a video that Nick Freitas came out as a former delegate to the Virginia Assembly. You know, he was saying it very clear. I'm not giving up my guns. And I don't think Nick Freitas is leaving Virginia anytime soon. That man is deeply rooted in the soil here, and he believes in what Virginia is about. And what we're seeing now coming after our Second Amendment rights is not what Virginia is about. I reminded people when these bills are getting passed and we expect that Governor Spanberger will sign it, you know, this is the state that gave us George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison. They believed in our Second Amendment rights, and now we're dealing with this governor who's coming to take those rights away, and these other legislatures in the assembly who are not representing, you know, the Virginians. They're representing special interest gun control, and it's a terrible thing for Virginia right now.
It absolutely is, but Nick Freitas, I'm going to stay and fight. I'm not leaving anytime soon, and I know that Virginia gun owners, again, we're sending a message right now with our wallets, with our pocketbooks, hopefully with our voices to lawmakers as well. And Mark, I look forward to having you back again. Maybe we can have you back next month and talk about the May numbers in Virginia. Again, an 80% increase or 79% increase over what the April sales were. I'm curious if we get to 100% or more.
I would be a very good day to talk to you about that, about Virginia's exercising their rights. I'm sorry to have to be under these circumstances. But of course, we love to see that responsible, law-abiding gun owners, whether that be in Virginia or Oklahoma or Texas. But we love to see that people are exercising their rights in a responsible way. And you know, it's we think that those numbers are going to continue to increase right up through July 1st.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Virginia is second in the country, excuse me, in terms of long gun sales last month, which is amazing to me, behind only Texas. And we should mention as well, the NFA numbers, because you guys are breaking those down too.
Yeah.
Once again, Virginia second in the nation in terms of NFA checks performed. But nationally, I'm pleasantly surprised to see this 130% increase in NFA checks over April of 2025. We're now, again, 4 months into the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the zeroing out of the $200 transfer tax on suppressors and short-barreled firearms. And those numbers, Mark, are still really high. Like, I was a little concerned that, you know, we'd see this huge rush in January, February, and then things would sort of settle back down. But this is starting to look like the new normal, right? I mean, when folks don't have to pay that $200 tax, we've seen in the appropriations bill that the House is working on this year, this would zero out the registration requirement for suppressors and SBRs as well. But boy, it really seems like, you know, there are Americans all across the country that are taking advantage of these new savings for suppressors and NFA items. You know, those numbers continue to look really strong.
Yeah, I think it's beyond that, too. I think what you're seeing is that people, as they become exposed to what suppressors are and what they aren't, they've gotten that educational benefit. And they realize that it's not what you see in the movies. They realize that it is, as I like to jokingly say, but there's truth in the joke. This is just civilized. You know, we're actually able to be able to range and be a better neighbor when you have an outdoor range and it's not such a loud report of a gun when you're shooting. When you're hunting, I use a suppressor nearly every time I hunt now. To be able to do that, you're not spooking the game as much. You're actually able to get a better shot because you have reduced recoil. If you have to take a second shot to be able to ethically put that animal on the ground, it is helpful. And I think people are seeing the benefits of having that. And I think that's, aside from having that tax go away, as people become more exposed to this, they're starting to understand that there's a benefit to being able to have suppressors. So I think that you're going to see that number continue to grow as well. I think that will, as you said, we may be in that new normal right now of people using suppressors. And I think you're going to see form fours continue to keep going through. And you know, I might have to actually tell my wife that maybe it's time to look at another suppressor for another gun. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, I wish I could gift a couple of suppressors to my neighbors. My Great Pyrenees is cursed with, she is so scared of fireworks and gunshots. And I feel so bad for her being owned by me for one thing. And then living out in the country where the sound of freedom can be heard on a regular basis. So I would love it if maybe we could just have a little bit quieter experience for her. But I'm doing my part. And Mark, again, man, always really good talking with you. I look forward to doing this again in the very near future. And maybe the next time we speak, Red Sox will have pulled out of the cellar and be in, you know, fourth or third place in the AL East.
There's always hope, right?
That's right. Mark Oliva joining us from the National Shooting Sports Foundation here on Barry and Arms Cam and Company. My thanks once again to Mark for joining us on the program. Looking forward to talking with him again in the near future. Now, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, I want to talk about this for a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell the story all its own. Every stitch, every buckle, every strap, reflecting timeless craftsmanship, and it's backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection, and you can find yours today, maybe even one that looks like mine, at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. I'm not sure when my next adventure with my Modern Rugged bag will be. Probably a little bit more than a month from now. Going to be in Massachusetts for the Gold 250 event. Gun Owners Action League put it on a fantastic event. You can find more information at gold.org. But I know that I'll be there for that. May have a couple of local trips around Virginia between now and then, just weekend getaways. But I'm telling you, I love this bag. It is, I've talked about it before. I mean, I can fit all of my stuff that I need to travel with me for work, with, you know, the laptop, the cords, my USB hub, even, you know, a small microphone, and it fits. I mean, there's so many compartments in this bag. It's amazing. It's like the, it's like that. If you ever played Dungeons and Dragons when you were a kid, or maybe even as an adult, it's like my bag of holding. It just holds way much more than you think it would. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Florida. Bail jumped, gun drawn, Winter Haven probationer jailed after playground face-off. That's the headline. The probationer in question, pretty young man, just 20 years of age. Now, this incident happened on May the 3rd when a juvenile in Winter Haven, Florida, called his mom and said, hey, there's somebody at this rec center who has a gun and he's looking for me. So mom gets in her car, drives up to the rec center in question, starts asking people, oh, you know, who's this guy? Who's going after my son? And, nobody's got an issue with your son. So she's getting ready to leave, presumably with her kid. And according to police reports, 20-year-old Jamarius Julian then lifts up his sweatshirt, pulls out a pistol in full view of the woman. And she says, hey, you know what? I'm calling 911. I guess, thankfully, he decided to flee the area instead of escalating things and trying to harm her. There were multiple witnesses there at the rec center who backed up her account of the drawing of the firearm, or at least the display of that firearm. Officers from the Winter Haven Police Department flooded the area. They quickly located a man matching the suspect description. Julian was positively identified and then taken into custody. According to the Tampa Bay Free Press, records show that Julian was already under the supervision of the state of Florida. Again, he's 20 years old. Keep in mind, just 20. He is currently on probation for a violent history that includes, but is not limited to, aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer, grand theft, and fleeing to elude. He now faces new charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, as well as violation of probation. Taken to the Polk County Sheriff's Processing Center, where as of Monday morning, he remained behind bars. So again, I mean, the question in my mind is, how is a 20-year-old already have a lengthy violent criminal history that includes aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer? And the answer is, well, either he did very little time behind bars, or he did no time behind bars and was essentially placed on probation after, you know, time served awaiting trial, or at least awaiting a plea deal. And again, you know, this just goes to show you that these issues are not endemic to blue states. Yes, we talk about what happens in Chicago quite a bit. I could do a story every day about what's going on in Chicago. But it's not just Chicago. It's not just San Francisco. It's not just Portland, Oregon. It's not just, you know, places with George Soros-backed DAs. This is a situation that is commonplace in almost every jurisdiction of the country, because the vast majority of felony cases result in plea bargains, and the vast majority of felony cases that result in plea bargains result in lesser sentences. And so you can have somebody who's accused of very serious crimes end up with a slap on the wrist, and the prosecutor gets to say, got a conviction, but it's really impossible for the public to accurately say that justice was served in these cases. Now, on to today's Armed Citizen story. The headline, police confirm investigation into fatal shooting of home intruder. This happened in Philadelphia, where soft on crime prosecutor Larry Krasner is in charge of the criminal justice system. Thankfully, the right of self-defense still exists in Philadelphia. And according to Philly Police Inspector D.F. Pace, a woman was shot multiple times by a legal gun owner after she entered his home through a back window and then refused to leave. This happened Monday afternoon about 1 o'clock. Suspect was pronounced dead at Temple University Hospital shortly before 2 p.m. According to Pace, he said that it appears that this is a case of a person defending oneself inside their own home. Persons inside heard the glass break, went to see what was going on, and saw a person attempting to come in through the back window. The residents of that house told the person to get back, but the person then continued to come into the home. The homeowners, the person who shot at the person breaking in, actually attempted to assist that individual after that person was shot and no longer a threat, assisting officers by helping carry that person into the car, into a waiting police car, where she, again, she was taken to the hospital. And, you know, that does not really surprise me. You know, the vast majority of us who own firearms for self-defense we just want to live our lives, right? I don't know about you, but I've never woken up in the morning and thought, man, I hope today's the day somebody tries to break into my home. No. When I say my prayers at night before I go to bed, I never say, God, please deliver a home invader to my property. No. We just want to live our lives. We're not trigger happy, as some people say. We're not vigilantes, as some anti-gun activists say. And when somebody does break into our home, and we are forced to defend ourselves, do we want to see that person die? No. Again, we want to be safe. We want to be protected. That's it, right? So I'm sure that those homeowners had no animosity towards that home intruder. Oh, maybe a little animosity after breaking in. But the reason why they fired that gun was not because they had a beef with that home intruder. It was because they wanted to protect the people that they love. They wanted to protect themselves. So we'll keep our eyes on this situation, see if there is any more details that become available here in the near future. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Also from Pennsylvania, a ICU nurse who was off duty, actually in her neighborhood, and who was able to, with the help of her dad, actually help a driver who was suffering cardiac arrest. This is a kind of a scary story. Retired Pennsylvania State Police driver had a heart attack while he was behind the wheel of his vehicle in the Fairview neighborhood of Erie, Pennsylvania. Colleen Schechtel was getting ready to go to a bridal shower. This was April 25th. And she saw this gentleman, Jim Ruff, inside his black pickup truck. He was going to meet his grandson for breakfast. And again, he suffered this cardiac event. His truck leaves the road, actually goes across 3 yards there in this subdivision. He said, all I remember is everything slowly fading to black. Colleen Schechtel, again, saw what was going on. She said, you know, typically when she's performing CPR, she says, I'm doing that in a controlled environment where I have lots of resources. There are doctors and nurses and other staff to lean on. She said, I think that's what makes the situation so unique is that I did not have those resources when I ran into Jim. So she called 911, first of all, and she also called her dad, who I guess lives very close by because he is a retired firefighter. He runs over. He smashes a window because the truck is actually locked. So smashes the window so they can get inside the truck, take Jim Ruff out of the truck so that Colleen Schechtel could then start CPR. And by the time she started that, she could hear the sirens. She said, I heard one of the neighbors had mentioned, oh, that's Jim. So I guess Jim lives in that neighborhood. She said, I remember saying, Jim, you got to stay with us. You got to stay with us. They're almost here. Well, Jim did stay with Colleen, taken to a hospital. The day after the incident, he had a defibrillator implanted. After he woke up, Colleen Schechtel wanted to see him. She was there. He said she wanted to meet me, and I definitely wanted to meet her. And I woke up, and this beautiful lady's right in front of me, and she introduced herself, and we actually hugged, and we both cried. Colleen Schechtel said the moment was pretty amazing. Just the emotions and everything. She said, I'll never forget it. Jim Ruff says he won't forget it either. He said he believes that God deserves all the praise for having Colleen Schechtel there at the right moment. He said he sent an angel at that time. So kudos to Erie News Now for covering this story, and kudos for Colleen Schechtel and her dad in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a neighbor in need. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, and I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League. I probably will mention the Goal 250 event, but there are a couple of other issues in Massachusetts that we need to discuss, including the dangers of lawful gun owners traveling through the state. Now, hopefully this gets better with one of the rules that's been proposed by the ATF. I actually wrote about this proposed rule at BearingArms.com today. ATF released the text of 21 of the 34 proposed rules. Not all of them dealing with firearms, but the vast majority of them do. The rules have not officially been published yet. That is supposed to take place on Wednesday. That'll kick off the 90-day public comment period. But the unpublished rules are available for folks to look at. And I did a semi-deep dive into the rules regarding interstate transportation of firearms under the Firearms Owners Protection Act. And this is something that I think will definitely benefit gun owners who are traveling through anti-gun jurisdictions like Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, among other things. ATF says, hey, you know what? These protections should cover not only the lawful transportation of the firearms, but accessories, things like sights, and most importantly, magazines. So if you can legally possess a 20-round magazine in the state where you live, and you can legally possess a 20-round magazine in the state where you're traveling to, you can't get arrested. You can't be charged for having a 20-round magazine in your vehicle while you're driving through Massachusetts or Maryland or New York, so long as that magazine is stored in accordance with the requirements under the Firearms Owners Protection Act. There's also a section that deals with, you know, incidental stoppage, right? So let's say your car breaks down, you get hungry, you want to have a bite to eat. Right now, the way that the ATF has interpreted this particular statute of the Gun Control Act, you're not really allowed to stop. Even if you have that firearm locked away, inaccessible, you're violating the ATF's interpretation of the law. That would change. And you could not only stop to grab a bite to eat, use the facilities if you need to, again, deal with, you know, car maintenance. Let's say you are flying. And I'll give you a real-world example. In fact, this was an example that the ATF references in this proposed rule. Let's say you're flying from a place where you can legally own a gun to a place where you can legally own a gun. You've got your baggage checked. So everything's locked up. You're good to go, right? But your flight gets diverted because of bad weather. And you're forced to land in, let's say, Newark, New Jersey. It's late at night. There are no more flights until the morning. So you get your checked baggage. You got to go back to the Newark airport early in the morning, but you got to find some place to sleep. There was a case where this happened to somebody flying, I believe, from Utah, maybe flying back to Utah. And when he went to the airport the next morning, declared his firearm, I needed to, you know, check my luggage again, he was arrested. He ended up suing, claiming that his 14th Amendment rights were violated. And a court said, not really. Because you know what the law is. You know, you could have asked the airline to hold your luggage for you. You could have asked law enforcement to hold your luggage for you. Even though that really wasn't an option. Under this proposed ATF rule, if you are in a circumstance like that, yes, you can take your firearm in its locked container to a hotel with you as you stay overnight. And then you go back to the airport the next morning. You get on your flight. And again, you're not going to be facing arrest. At least, supposedly, you're not going to be facing arrest. We'll see if the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey would abide by that proposed rule. But that is what the ATF wants to see. So that is one of the rules that you can take a look at. I am encouraged by what I've seen, but we'll be covering more of those rules in the days to come as well. You can check it out at BearingArms.com. In fact, I would encourage you to check out all of the stories that we've got for you at BearingArms.com. And if you like what you see, would also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. No matter what tier of support you choose, you're going to get some great benefits, and you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. If you are a VIP Gold or Platinum member, one of the cool things that you get as a benefit is the ability to take part in our weekly live chats. We do that every Wednesday, 1:30 Eastern. With Hot Air Zed Morrissey. We're going to be doing that tomorrow as well. I would love to see you there. And if you go to BearingArms.com/subscribe and you use the promo code FIGHT, you can get 60% off your membership, no matter what tier of support you choose. And again, no matter what tier you choose, I want to thank you for supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. It definitely means a lot and it has a big impact. So thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. I'll be on Newsmax with Carl Higbee in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour. I'll see you back here tomorrow when we're talking with Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League. But until then, be well, be safe, and be free.